Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you aboard as we delve for 1 hour, at least 1 hour, into the week to come and the week past. The week past, we had Halloween, not our favorite holiday around the McBurney compound, but we do participate for the candy, indeed. We do participate for the candy. And, of course, the candy is only for the children. We also had a hurricane last week. And I've got a story related to the hurricane. I'll get to that quickly because I've got some apologies to make. Awful destruction. Our thoughts and prayers are with the folks there on the East Coast who've been affected by Hurricane Sandy. Just terrible, terrible news out there. And Halloween, what can we say about Halloween? Well, we're in it for the candy only. We admit that up front. But we also dressed, we have three little girls, ages 11, 5, and 3. And we dressed them up as kitty princesses. And it was just, it's delightful. Painted their faces. And it's just a good time was had by all. We try to avoid the whole gore and death elements of Halloween, and we focus on the dressing up and having fun and all that. Speaking of gore and death and destruction, next week we've got the election. We're sitting here just, less than 48 hours until the polls open, right? Is that right? Am I doing my math right? Let's just say the polls open within 72 hours, just to be safe. But the election is impending. It is upon us. And this is the time when talk show hosts prognosticate and make predictions about what they think is going to happen in the election. Am I going to fall into that same trap? Why, yes, of course I am. I'll make my bold prediction. Should I do it right here at the top, or should I make you wait? I'm going to make you wait. That's a tease, they call it in the business, to try to get you to listen. So bear with me, because I do have some important news that I want to open with here. I've got this story that I pulled down from the Associated Press, Dateline Huntington Beach, California. Michael Lucker, frontman for the death metal band Suicide Silence, died last Thursday of injuries in a Southern California motorcycle crash. He was 28 years old. Yes. Do we have any bumpers from, what's the band here, Suicide Silence? Are we going to use any? No, we don't have any of their records here on hand at the compound. And I must say, I'd never heard of this band until the unfortunate passing of Mitchell Lucker, who was the front man. I think that's the guy who screams a lot in a death metal band. And I believe that you're required to have a lot of tattoos. That's about all I know about front men for death metal bands. But let's get to the details. Lucker lost control of his Harley Davidson in Huntington Beach on Halloween night and slammed into a light pole and died the following morning in hospital, as they say. The accident was being investigated to determine whether alcohol was a fact, according to police there in Huntington Beach. The record label for which this band, Suicide Silence, produced three records. The record label's website described Suicide Silence, of the band, as, quote, modern death metal for a new generation, unquote. And isn't that what we really needed for the new generation? We need, forget the old death metal, we need modern death metal for a new generation. And so, living up to his creed of death metal, Mr. Lucker has died, simply enough, not to put too fine a point on it. But his wife, the following day, His wife says she begged him that night not to leave home drunk and ride his motorcycle. Apparently, Mr. Lucker was intoxicated and has passed from the scene. On Halloween night, no less, a death metal. I wonder what it's like to come before the judgment seat of the living God as a death metal frontman on Halloween night. I mean, can you imagine the terror, not to mention the irony of it all? Judgment Day for Mitchell Lucker has already occurred. And I can assure you that he sobered up immediately upon standing before the judgment seat of the living God there on Halloween night. All right. No honorary bumpers from Suicide Silence, my dear? No? Okay. The band was formed, well, we don't know. To be honest with you, I haven't done a whole lot of research into the story, and I wasn't a fan. I never did get into death metal. When I listen to music, I like to have fun. I don't like to contemplate death and blood and bludgeoning and all the stuff that death metal seems to be about. I never even understood the moniker death metal. Death metal. Okay. Well, I guess everybody has to have a hobby. And there are probably few that are as destructive as death metal, not only to the participants, but to the kids who listen to that stuff. Anyway, I don't know. Do you have a candlelight vigil for a death metal front man covered in tattoos? No. Oh, you have. I guess you'd have like a mosh pit type thing where you all beat one another and spit on one another. I don't know what they're. I don't know what the funeral will be like. But I can assure you, Judgment Day was quite interesting. Be interested to catch up on that when I get to the other side. All right. Now I told you I had some news regarding the recent hurricane. From the Daily Mail over in the United Kingdom, the headline screamed out at me from, well, probably from the Drudge Report or WorldNet Daily. I'm not sure where I got the story, but I just want to thank the folks at Drudge and WorldNet Daily, CNN, LifeSite News. Did I put CNN before LifeSite News? I apologize for that. I was going alphabetically. Anyway, all those folks who do all this research for me, it's just outstanding, and I really do appreciate it. But from the Daily Mail over in the United Kingdom, the headline screams, Muslim clerics say Sandy is God's punishment upon America. That's right. In Egypt, a radical cleric has described Hurricane Sandy as revenge from God. That's right. That's a Muslim cleric. They call him a radical cleric. There in Egypt. By the way, in Egypt, a radical cleric, they just call him a cleric in Egypt. Only in the United Kingdom and certain parts of the Western world do we still refer to these type of people as radical clerics. In Egypt, they just call them cleric or president or Supreme Court justice. Anyway, he says Sandy is revenge from God. This cleric, do I have his name here? I don't know if I wrote his name down. Well, it doesn't matter because I probably wouldn't be able to pronounce it properly. And so we'll just move on. We'll just assume that it's one of many radical clerics there in Egypt. This cleric said, oh, here we go. Egyptian hardline cleric Wagdi Gonaim. Gonaim. See, I knew it. Should have just left that aside. Anyway, an Egyptian hardline cleric says, quote, some people wonder about the hurricane in America and its causes. In my opinion, it is revenge from God for the beloved prophet. Mohammed is his name. Never be munificent and munificent. Unquote. That is radical cleric Wagdi Gonaim there in Egypt. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, here in the civilized West, we have a quote from Chaplain John McTernan here in America, and he has given us the real cause of Hurricane Sandy. He says, well, the author says, should we blame permutations in the flux of temperature systems and so forth? Not at all. It's sin. That's right. God is angry at both Obama and Romney for being too lenient on the homosexual agenda. Chaplain John McTiernan, who I have no doubt is a good, solid Christian fellow, who I could probably sit and have a cup of tea with. He said, quote, God is systematically destroying America, unquote. He wrote that on his blog. And I would just like to say to Mr. McTernan, along with Mr. Gonaim, one a radical cleric, one just a good, decent Christian fellow who's a little confused about certain things. Regarding God punishing America, God systematically destroying America, no. We, the people, are systematically destroying America. We, the people, are inviting the judgment, not by God in some mystical sense where he sends down judgment dust into the clouds and forms a hurricane. We're inviting the judgment that God built into the system. You know, God's just not protecting us as much anymore. I mean, we've banished him from our collective conscience, from the public square. And so no mystical forces are required for us to invite judgment upon ourselves and catastrophe. A mere lack of biblical godly wisdom leads naturally to destruction. And I can assure you that out there in New Jersey and Staten Island and other places devastated by Sandy, it is only the Spirit of Christ that prevents wholesale mayhem and Lord of the Flies-like behavior. It is the Spirit of Christ that is still in the world that preserves those places that have been destroyed. And in those instances where there is looting and mayhem and murder and robbery, it is the absence of the Spirit of Christ that leads to those type of behaviors. Because mankind in his natural state is pretty vicious and brutal, especially when he's cold and hungry and thirsty. So that's why we pray for our brothers and sisters out there who've been affected. Because we know that it is the Spirit of Christ and the Christians who will preserve that part of the country. And it will be the force of their spirituality that leads to rebuilding and regeneration. Except maybe the Jersey Shore. I was tempted to say that God has rendered his opinion of the Jersey Shore, but I thought that would be insensitive. Yeah, only if he had destroyed MTV headquarters. Had the hurricane had a direct hit on MTV headquarters, we could have slipped that in, but the destruction is too vast, and the loss is just too immense to be joking around like that. And I'm sure the Jersey Shore is a fine place. It's a place. It's not just a show. Yeah, so, yeah. I'm sure it's a fun place with the roller coasters. And I mean, that was awful looking. With the roller coaster in the ocean, I mean, wow. Wow. Okay. So let's move to the politics file now. We have a quote from Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton, the 40th president. Was he the 40th president of the United States? Well, I just don't recall. He was there in the 40s, I think. Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton was at a party campaign for President Barry Ho in Virginia. And he talked about, this is according to the Weekly Standard, Bill Clinton talked about bringing this country together and crossing all of its diversity, all of it. He said, quote, one of the things the decider-in-chief has to do is decide whether he's going to bring this country together across all its diversity or let it drift apart. Look at how much stronger the American military is because it's less racist, less sexist, and less homophobic. Yeah, we're just looking for people who can do the job. Unquote. Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. Regarding the military, Bubba. He says the military is so much stronger now that we've let the homosexuals run rampant and homosexualize the barracks, the submarines, the aircraft carriers, the battleships and destroyers. Yeah, Bubba, tell that to the guys in Benghazi. Tell them how much stronger the military is. Tell that to the troops of Fort Hood, how much stronger America's military is. Because it's less racist, less sexist, and less homophobic. Bubba, when the military becomes a social experiment ruled by politicians and generals who are obsessed with sex, which is what you turned it into, Bubba. When the military becomes that, it becomes a paper tiger. It becomes far less effective because the perverts at the top are less inclined to use it properly, Bubba, as it should have been used in Fort Hood and in Benghazi. Sad state of affairs that our military has been brought to. And a lot more is going to come out about Benghazi. I'm assuming that you're all up to date on the details. And so I don't want to delve into those, but I just do want to remind those who have misused the governmental authority that was ordained by God to abuse the body politic. I just want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that perversion and corruption leads to death. And we saw that in Benghazi. We saw that at Fort Hood. And we will continue to see that until the Christians stand up and no longer elect deviants, perverts, liars, child killers, and thieves. I've been engaged in debates this past week, seemingly endless debates with my good Christian friends on the internet who have decided to vote for Mitt Romney. Now I'm not voting for Mitt Romney. Now I haven't sent my ballot in yet. Got my mail ballot and I filled it out. I'm giving a few politicians one last chance to respond to the pro-life survey that they ignored before I cast my ballot. I'll do it on Tuesday. But I've been trying to convince my good Christian brothers, who I love, by the way, that until we, the Christians, the ones who have the answers, because we have access to the living God, until we stop being duped and taken advantage of by Republican politicians who lie to our face, telling us we have to vote for them so that, what was the biggest one? Oh, so that they can put the right people on the Supreme Court, so that they can overturn Roe versus Wade, and so that we can have a government that's not full-on Marxist like we have right now. And I understand my brother's fear of the boogeyman, Barack Obama. He is scary, and I agree another 4 years will be catastrophic for the country. It will be. But it's time to teach the Republicans a lesson. And I'm going to do it myself. I don't know if it'll work. I don't know who's going to win. I guess this is a good time for my prediction. I predict that a progressive liberal will win on Tuesday and become the next president of the United States. That's the best I can do. Now, based on my own personal survey of my circle of friends, acquaintances, coworkers, I would have to say Romney should win walking away. But the Democrats are going to cheat. They're going to keep it close. And perhaps, just perhaps, there are enough voters who retain and refuse to walk away from their principles, who simply will not vote for Mitt Romney, who is lying to your face. He's running pro-abort ads here in Colorado. He's running them 3-4 times a night on the local news. He gets on there and talks about how he's not going to stop abortion. In fact, he says he believes in abortion in certain cases. He's running those ads. Anyway, my sincere hope is that it comes down to Colorado. You'll remember that Mitt Romney stumbled over the Rockies back during the primary when he was defeated here by the hapless Rick Santorum. Could he stumble over the Rockies again? Virginia, Ohio, Florida, they all get decided, and it comes down to little old Colorado. I would love to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday watching them count the votes from Colorado. And I would love to see Mr. Romney stumble over the Rockies once again. Because if Mitt Romney loses, ladies and gentlemen, there is going to be a battle for the soul of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. If Mitt Romney loses, I fear that we all go back to sleep. And I think the time to take your medicine is now. The time to repent. Today is the day. No point in hoping for a financial sugar high from Mitt Romney's election. I would rather get on with it. Let's get on with fixing it. Let's fight the enemy. Let's draw the line in the sand and fight the enemy. Anyway, okay, so, but that's just me. If you vote for Mitt Romney, I'm not going to say that you're sinning or that you're condemned to eternal damnation or anything like that. I just think it's not wise. That's all. And we can disagree on that. And I don't want you to think that I'm judging you as some sort of evil person. I understand. I was there once myself. I voted for George Bush the first, if I'm not mistaken. How embarrassing is that? All right. Now, let's get to the personhood file, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to the Miami Herald. And a story regarding Mr. Larry Flint, whom we're all familiar with, I do believe, the publisher of a certain pornographic magazine, who should be arrested, tried, and executed for what he's done to the women and the men of America. Larry Flint offered U.S. Senate candidate Richard Murdoch $1 million in a paid advertisement that he placed last Thursday in the print edition of the Indianapolis Star. The offer, Flint says, quote, I will say he's challenging Murdoch to prove, if the Hoosier Republican can provide proof to substantiate his statement that even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that is something that God intended to happen. Now, I don't want to go back into Mr. Murdoch's unfortunately phrased comments. I think Mr. Murdoch was talking about the life was intended. I don't think he was saying the rape was intended, but all that aside, Flint says, I will accept for purposes of this reward any verifiable transcript of Mr. Murdoch's personal conversations with God, letters, emails, text messages or videos from God, or messages addressed to you from God transmitted by any third party. Okay? That's Mr. Flint's challenge. Now, let's keep in mind that Mr. Flint doesn't believe in God. Or, actually, he probably does believe in God. He knows there's a God, but he refuses to humble himself and worship him as God. And, in fact, he openly mocks and undermines God on a daily basis for money. So he's the worst kind of evil lowlife deceiver. He's the worst type of person. And so he's challenged Mr. Murdoch to produce evidence, including any messages addressed to you from God transmitted by any third party. Flint goes on to state that he assumes Murdoch was authorized by God. He assumes Murdoch would not have made his statement unless he had been authorized by God. Flint says, no one who believes in God would ever use the Almighty's name in vain. That would be blasphemy, says Larry Flint, one of the leading blasphemers on the planet. So when it comes to blasphemy, Larry Flint knows what he's talking about. That's for sure. All right. I don't want to get any more into Murdoch, but I just want to say to Mr. Flint, if you're listening, you said that you would accept as proof any messages addressed to Mr. Murdoch from God transmitted by any third party. Well, I am going to introduce the third party. His name is Jeremiah. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Jeremiah, being the third party, said in the first chapter and the fifth verse, quote, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations," unquote. Mr. Flint, there is your third-party transmission in the Holy Scriptures. Not only, in fact, it's personally addressed to Mr. Murdoch and anyone else willing to read it, Mr. Flint, including you. And I'll bet you Mr. Flint has read it, but it doesn't fit in with his modus operandi. Anyway, so hopefully Larry Flint comes through on his promise to Richard Murdoch and cuts him that check for $1 million because we have cited a third-party source, the prophet Jeremiah. Thank you very much. Thank you, Lord, for your word. We certainly do appreciate it. Do I want to go on Murdoch? Well, let me just say this because I've got to get it out there. Murdoch, this is the last paragraph from the Miami Herald article. Murdoch said his position on abortion is that he believes the only exception should be in instances where the mother's life is in jeopardy. Mr. Murdoch, I love you. You're my brother. And I hope you win. By the way, folks, if Richard Murdoch wins, that proves that there may still be hope to salvage America from the scrap heap of history. Richard Murdoch and Todd Akin. If those two fellas win, there may yet be hope. But Mr. Murdoch, it's never necessary to kill the baby to save the mother's life. Sometimes we have to remove the baby. We understand that. And medical technology being what it is, quite often the baby dies as a result of being removed too early. But that's not an abortion, Mr. Murdoch. An abortion is the intentional killing of the child. It's a different thing. There is no exception. There is no justification for killing an innocent person, Mr. Murdoch. You had it right the first time. You had it right when you were 8 years old. You've been confused. You know, in many, many, many countries around the world, abortion is illegal, except in the case of the life of the mother. And by that exception, the floodgates are open, and abortion is as common in many countries as gallstone surgery. Yeah. All because of one exception that negates the personhood of the unborn child. All right. So there we have Larry Flint owes Richard Murdoch $1 million. Okay. Now on to the personhood file. The Supreme Court of the United States has declined to hear a case involving the anti-abortion rights movement push to define personhood in the law. If you've listened to this show, you know that the Oklahoma State Supreme Court halted the petition gathering operation to put personhood on the ballot in Oklahoma. They cited Roe and Casey. They said that if the personhood law were to be voted into effect, that it would be unconstitutional based on previous United States Supreme Court decisions. Well, in stating that, the Oklahoma State Supreme Court opened the door for a challenge that may even involve Roe versus Wade and Casey and all of that. A challenge to the court's ruling on legalized abortion in America. Well, the Supreme Court has declined to hear the case. Why, you might ask? I had one of my good brothers on Facebook told me that, well, the reason they didn't take it is because they know they don't have the votes to overturn Roe. And that... I concede the point that they don't have the votes. The Supreme Court is liberal. There's not a single pro-life Supreme Court justice, not one. In fact, American Right to Life has had a standing offer to National Right to Life of $10,000 if they can name one justice who has ever written one time, either in a dissent or in a majority opinion, that an unborn child has an inalienable right to life. And you know what? Nobody can find that because none of them are pro-life. May some of them want to overturn Roe? Yes, they might, but they're not pro-life. And I reminded my brother that the day Roe versus Wade is overturned, we're going to wake up the next morning and find out there's a myriad of abortion regulations, instructions on how to kill a baby legally that will keep abortion legal in all 50 states. And by the way, those laws were put forth and funded, those campaigns were funded by National Right to Life Committee, the pro-life industry, and Christian money from Christians like you and I. We passed the laws that will keep abortion legal should Roe ever fall. And if the Supreme Court justices were truly pro-life, if they truly had a burning desire to get involved in the issue of abortion and make it stop, they would have taken this case simply to elevate social tension and to allow the personhood argument to be made in the Supreme Court. They did not do that. Why didn't they do it? Because they're not pro-life. Electing Republicans does not guarantee us a court that is going to be just when it comes to the personhood of the unborn child. This is the latest repudiation of the National Right to Life Committee strategy, the Republican Party establishment ruse that we need to elect them so that they can fix the court, so that they can overturn Roe versus Wade. Could you please write us a check? I'm the man who knows that places must be the ones who start more than the reality. And I'm Doug McBurney, and I'm so glad to have you aboard as we analyze the collective psyche of the body politic and the church, and even you heathens. We'll include you in the arguments. Come on in. The water's warm. Don't be afraid. So, we've just covered the latest repudiation of the idea that you can undermine the unalienable right to life and ever hope to win the ultimate battle against the forces of darkness that have captured our government, our churches, our institutions of higher learning, our grade schools, our preschools. And now I've got an article here from Yahoo News, which apparently is now a legitimate news organization. They have their own reporter. Her name was attached to this article, but I inadvertently deleted it. So I don't know who this woman is, but this is an opinion piece, and it's called it's Abortion Politics Campaign 2012. This vile heathen Yahoo News reporter opens up with this line: "Happy birthday, abortion!" Yeah. She says, "That's right, since around the 5th century BC, when the Hippocratic Oath for physicians first contained a clause about abortion, we've driven ourselves insane over the implications of a simple, common ancient medical procedure." You see, folks, when you don't respect the inherent right to life of every innocent person, the butchering of an innocent baby becomes a simple, common, and even ancient medical practice. The author says, this is where the tension surrounding abortion has always resided. Is the art of medicine, the protection and promotion of life and health, best practice by allowing or prohibiting abortion? You know, she could have said, is the art of medicine, the protection and promotion of life and health, best practiced by allowing or prohibiting the killing of babies? But she didn't. She used the euphemism abortion because she's basically been brainwashed her whole life. I mean, it's a right. She's never been properly educated that that's an innocent person. And so it's just an abortion. It's a medical practice. She says, I found that this tension is thoroughly resolved by the Hippocratic Oath itself. We need not revisit Roe versus Wade or the teachings of Operation Rescue. The ancient oath vows above all to, quote, protect health and life, unquote. Hippocrates then specifically says that towards this end, he won't perform euthanasia, he won't perform abortion, and he won't remove kidney stones and gallstones. Does that mean these procedures are in and of themselves immoral? Far from it. Rather, these three procedures, we are made to understand, require both philosophical and manual work for which early physicians trained in medicine but not abdominal surgery were simply not qualified. Yes, so what Hippocrates meant in saying that he personally wouldn't perform an abortion was that he just didn't feel he had the skills, and perhaps Hippocrates knew somewhere in the back of his mind that hundreds and even thousands of years hence that sophisticated surgical procedures for the butchering of innocent children will be developed and other people would have those skills, and those should be the doctors, perhaps, that perform abortions. She goes on to say, if a woman doesn't want to be pregnant or bear a child, she has a complaint that's deeply psychological and deeply physical, at least as physical as gallstones. So the author equates pregnancy with gallstones. She then continues, if medical men and women don't feel qualified to gauge the distress and seriousness of a woman presenting with pregnancy, by the way, as if it's a disease. She continues, let me start again. If a woman doesn't want to be pregnant or bear a child, she has a complaint that's deeply psychological and deeply physical, at least as physical as gallstones. If medical men and women don't feel qualified to gauge distress and the seriousness of a woman presenting with pregnancy and asking for an abortion, they should refer her to someone, a gynecological practice, Planned Parenthood, someone that's qualified to assess the patient and treat her. Okay, so that's, I'm finished with the author here of the Yahoo News article, this opinion piece. What she left out is that OBGYNs and the surgeons who work at Planned Parenthood, they all take the Hippocratic Oath as well. If I'm not mistaken, it's required to gain a medical license. Maybe it's not anymore, for crying out loud. I mean, it would be the ultimate hypocrisy to take the Hippocratic Oath and then become an abortionist. But perhaps hypocrisy is the mark of our age. Anyway, the fact that a journalist could write this article, ladies and gentlemen, is another repudiation of the failed strategy of abandoning the argument for the right to life of all innocent people and then hoping we can win over hearts and minds. Without the fundamental right to life, unalienable from God, without that, ladies and gentlemen, there is no foundation upon which we can educate the people, and in the end, they will butcher and kill one another. And that's where it's headed. Okay, fair warning. Whether Romney takes the White House or Obama takes the White House, what we need to do is we need to get back to the fundamentals, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, not killing babies is not some high calling. It to me, it's the bare minimum requirement to be called a civilized human being. And we've lost even that. We need to get back to the fundamentals, and that's why I'm a fundamentalist. And I invite you to consider being a fundamentalist as well. All right. Another one from the personhood file. From the Washington Post. Missouri Republican Senate candidate Todd Akin was arrested at least 8 times in the 1980s. A bombshell. What was it? prostitution, drunk driving? What was it that Todd Akin was up to in the 1980s where he was arrested 8 times? Folks, there aren't too many people running for the Senate who've been arrested 8 times. Now, Mr. Akin had only acknowledged 4 of those arrests previously. But a new article in the St. Louis Dispatch revealed 4 additional arrests that Mr. Akin was involved in. Akin was arrested on October 26, 1985, April 19, 1986, February 28, 1987, December 27, 1986, and then more between March 1985 and May 1987. And also one, the last known arrest came shortly before Akin's 1988 election to the Missouri State House, where he served for 12 years before descending into the United States House of Representatives. So you count them up, folks. That's 8 arrests. Yeah. All of the arrests were the result of Akin's protests outside abortion clinics in Missouri and Illinois. Todd Akin was one of those people who was willing to put his money where his mouth is, who was willing to put his freedom and his financial security on the line and try to shut down abortion clinics in the mid-1980s to late 1980s. And if Todd Akin wins the Senate seat in Missouri, which I do believe he will, it will be one shining nugget of hope from an election full of darkness and deception. Todd Akin and Mr. Murdoch, hopefully Mr. Murdoch can use the $1 million that I've secured from Hustler publisher Larry Flint, and that they can both win their Senate seats and give the true believers, those of us who are left who have not yet abandoned our principles, and give us some hope. Because here's the thing about Mr. Murdoch and his exception for the life of the mother. Mr. Murdoch is reachable, ladies and gentlemen. He just needs to be educated properly. He's not a doctor. He doesn't understand. So he's reachable. And I hope he wins. I could probably even vote for him were I in Missouri. Or if I was a Democrat, I could definitely vote for him. No matter where I am. Because I think he's reachable. I think he's confused. I think we're all, to a certain extent, ladies and gentlemen, victims of the education system and the culture that for the better part of 2 generations has miseducated the people. And that people don't understand that it's never necessary to kill the baby to save the mother. It's just not true, Mr. Murdoch. And I'm not sure if Akin has any exception. Oh, by the way, this idea that women never lie about rape, that's become a third rail, apparently, in politics, that you must not touch or your career will be over. To imply that a woman could ever claim she was raped is heresy, for which you will be publicly pilloried and driven from the public square, if at all possible. Mr. Akin and Mr. Murdoch are examples of extreme courage in the face of insurmountable assaults. And by the way, Roe versus Wade, the whole case was built on a lie about a rape. Yeah, Norma McCorvey in her book said that she was not raped. It was a lie. The whole thing was built on an illegitimate rape. All right, so that there, my political career's over, I suppose, for even saying that. Anyway, congratulations to Todd Akin for being arrested more times than me. but not more times than some people I know. All right, but at least he made an effort back in the 80s. When we probably had a shot at salvaging and righting this ship. This is how bad it's gotten now, ladies and gentlemen. Before we go to break, let me get to this story from the National Health Service over in the United Kingdom from the Telegraph. Almost 2/3 of NHS trusts using the Liverpool Care Pathway. You remember that, right? If you've listened to the show, the Liverpool Care Pathway is basically putting sick people on a pathway to die more quickly and cost NHS less money. Well, almost 2/3 of the hospitals using the Liverpool Care Pathway have received payouts totaling millions and millions of dollars for hitting targets related to its use. They suggest that about 85% of trusts have now adopted the Liverpool Care Pathway regime, which can involve the removal of hydration and nutrition from dying patients. That's food and water for those of you who graduated from public school. At many hospitals, more than 50% of all patients who died had been placed on the pathway. And in one case, the proportion of foreseeable deaths on the pathway was almost 9 out of 10. So what started as a nudge to help save NHS money has turned into a full-throated killing of sick old people in the UK. Opponents describe it as absolutely shocking that hospitals could be paid to employ potentially lethal treatments. But these opponents, ladies and gentlemen, these opponents of euthanasia that is rapidly escalating in the United Kingdom, these opponents themselves have abandoned the idea that every one of us, as innocent, free people, has an inherent right to life from our Creator. And because they have abandoned that, they should really not be shocked that this is what's happening. But I suppose when you start looking at the numbers, and especially if it's someone within your own family or circle of friends who is killed by one of these hospitals, I'm sure it is shocking. You shouldn't be shocked, though. You people abandoned the idea upon which civilization stands. And so it's getting pretty uncivilized. Back to the Telegraph article. The Liverpool Care Pathway was originally developed to ease suffering for dying patients. But the system has been mired in controversy amid claims that it can actively hasten death. Yes. Without a respect for life and the Creator, medical practice, medicine itself, and science become ruthless slaves of godless socialist economies.
The devil says.
We are on our way, ladies and gentlemen. On our way somewhere. But it's not predetermined where we're going to go, ladies and gentlemen. You and I have a responsibility to participate. All right. One more from the personhood file. This is from LifeSite News. From Toronto, Canada. A top human rights activist has accused the Chinese Communist Party of using forced abortion as a way of keeping an iron grip on political power. This is according to Reggie Littlejohn. Reggie Littlejohn is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. And she explains why she believes that the one-child policy will not end until the Chinese Communist Party's regime ends. She says, quote, "I believe that the terror of forced abortion is the purpose of the one-child policy." Littlejohn argued that China's one-child policy had in the beginning been genuinely instituted, in quotes, genuinely instituted as a way to control the population because, and this is me talking, not Reggie Littlejohn, because I believe that the Chinese bought into this whole overpopulation lie. Now, my extremely attractive audio engineer, she disagrees. She doesn't think they bought into any of that. She said, my wife thinks that it was always about power with China and control. They never bought into the left's population bomb scaremongering back in the 70s. They just simply took advantage of Western stupidity to institute the one-child policy. And I must say, reading Ms. Littlejohn's comments, I have to point out that my extremely attractive audio engineers, a fairly insightful person. She says, while it was genuinely instituted as a way to control the population, she says, but the terror created by enforcing the policy was an unexpected byproduct, too good to pass up by a power-hungry communist government. Littlejohn suggested how the Chinese government's infrastructure of coercion can be used to put down dissent if people start organizing for a democracy. She pointed out how part of the infrastructure of coercion includes paid informants who spy on their neighbors and friends to report pregnant women who have transgressed China's one-child policy. She says, quote, what that does is that it tears apart the natural relationships of trust in Chinese society. So if you can't trust anyone, you can't organize for a democracy. Littlejohn said governments of the West had become complicit with the forced abortion in China by funding United Nations Family Planning Fund and International Planned Parenthood. She noted how both organizations have been working hand in hand with the Chinese Communist Party for decades. She urged people in the West to have the organizations investigated and defunded as a significant way of combating brutality towards Chinese women. She says, quote, it doesn't matter if you're pro-choice or pro-life. She said, quote, nobody supports forced abortion because it's not a choice, unquote. Well, first of all, Ms. Littlejohn, I appreciate your work. I appreciate what you're doing. But these groups should not just be investigated and defunded. They should be investigated and imprisoned and tried for crimes against humanity is what should happen. And what will happen someday, it will happen, ladies and gentlemen. If we don't lose our nerve and if we don't buy into the lie that we can keep voting for people who are liars, thieves, and killers and still hope to win. Ms. Littlejohn, let me just remind you that she says nobody supports forced abortion, but yes, some do. Some do, Mrs. Littlejohn. They do support it. You mentioned Planned Parenthood, International Planned Parenthood. You mentioned the United Nations Family Planning Fund. And what about Pat Robertson? Pat Robertson said that we shouldn't be meddling in the business of China. What they do in China is their own business. Pat Robertson's okay with forced abortion. Just Google it up. Pat Robertson, forced abortion, China. Just Google that. You'll get the quote right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. All right. Now let's go to the justice file from Fox News. This is Dateline Golden, Colorado. Prosecutors say a teenager who allegedly confessed to killing 10-year-old Jessica Ridgway and attacking a runner also sexually assaulted the girl. 17-year-old Austin Sigg has been charged as an adult with 17 counts, one for both murder and sexual assault. Defense attorneys anticipate asking the judge to send the case to juvenile court. So this case obviously is, it has focused the attention of people in Colorado to the problem, the problems we have in society. And I want to start out by asking my fellow parents, you fathers and mothers out there, how much longer are we going to tolerate legalized sexual perversion and sexual immorality that leads to an avalanche, a fire hose blasting into our homes of pornography and filth and degradation? How much longer? How many of our children must die before we stand up and say no more? I'm not sure what the catalyst is going to be. I'm not sure how many bodies are going to have to be discovered. How many families are going to have to be destroyed? How many little girls and little boys are going to have to die before someone stands up and says, we are going to organize and we are going to fight to end the flow of filth and perversion that you filthy heathens have told us we have to tolerate. And why are we going to do it? Because our children are being killed. That's the first thing. That's the first thing. Secondly, it is outrageous that officials in our justice system have to go into court and lie and act like this 17-year-old kid is an adult in order to try to get some measure of justice. It's ridiculous. Our judicial system has become ludicrous on its face. When the prosecutors go into court and the first thing they have to do is make something up, because 17-year-old Austin Sigg is not an adult. We shouldn't have to make believe he is an adult. He should be tried. If he is convicted, he should be executed as a juvenile. But our laws have become so convoluted because we've abandoned so many of our founding principles that we try to put laws on top of band-aids on top of laws to try to fix what we've broken, and it doesn't work, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to get back to fundamentals. Any man who sheds man's blood, by men his blood shall be shed. I don't care if he's 17. I don't care if he's 15. It doesn't matter. I don't care if he's 30. It's murder. All right. So here in America, we still have an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to try to get this thing back. Well, let's go over to the Middle East. Christian Solidarity International, USA, is an organization led by one John Ebner. And he reports in WorldNet Daily. He started a seminar series in locations around America on issues of Christians being involved in intelligence analysis and terrorism threat assessment. Why? He says, quote, "The series of public events was initiated in response to the need for CSI to issue a genocide warning regarding the Christians of the Middle East. He said, we did so because we could clearly see that the conditions for eradication of Christian communities in the Middle Eastern region exist, and that the likelihood of genocide has been heightened by the forces of intolerant Muslim supremacism that have been unleashed as a result of the so-called Arab Spring," unquote. He says, Mr. Ebner says, "Since the fall of Saddam Hussein, roughly half of Iraq's 1 million Christians have been forced to flee the country, while many, perhaps a majority of the remnant in Iraq, are internally displaced." He says there's a similar situation in Syria. Today's Syrian Christian community is in the process of destruction. Not only is it subject to the general ravages of war that affect all Syrians, it is targeted by the Islamist-dominated opposition, who are supported politically and material by Washington, D.C., via Sunni allies, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey. He says, regarding the situation in Egypt, pogroms and other acts of violence against Christians have become daily occurrences in Egypt. Ebner says he sees similarities between the Christian situation in the Middle East and Europe's Jews before World War II. He says, quote, "There are many parallels between the plight of Christians today in the Islamic Middle East and that of Jews in Central Europe in the 1920s and 30s, and in both cases, the U.S. government and mainstream media, with few exceptions, tended to play down the threat of genocide." So for our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East, we need to pray and we need to act, ladies and gentlemen. And I would have to say the first act necessary before we can help them is to square away the disaster we have here. And no matter which progressive liberal wins the White House next week, they will be facing catastrophe. A coalescing of catastrophic circumstances faces the next man who walks into that Oval Office. No matter which liberal, progressive, baby-killing, homosexual-loving pagan it is. There, I said it. All right. So, while the Christians of the Middle East face the threat of genocide, the UN is on the case. From WorldNet Daily, advocates in Brazil have been joined by a coalition of United Nations groups in an effort to pressure the nation to criminalize homophobia. Yes, homophobia. Why? Because prejudices are a hindrance to AIDS prevention programs. According to a report from Julio Severo of Last Day's Watchman, a recent letter came from the expanded thematic group on HIV/AIDS in Brazil in joint partnership with UNAID, UNHCR, UNWomen, UNAIDS, UNESCO, UNFPA, and UNICEF, and several other UN groups. The signatories include the Brazilian Ministry of Health the Human Rights Special Secretariat of the Brazilian Presidency, and ABGLT, the largest homosexualist group in Brazil. A recent study tested the Brazilian population for homophobia by asking people to comment on such statements as this. Here's the statement, quote, "God made men and women different with different sexes so they could fulfill their role to have children," unquote. He said 92% of Brazilians who agreed partially or completely with that statement were labeled homophobic. Yeah. Based on the overall results of the study, the Brazilian government determined that 99% of its citizens are homophobic and therefore should be re-educated. So there we have the United Nations on the case, fixing the problems of the world as Christians are burned and stabbed, beaten, clubbed, and beheaded in the Middle East. The United Nations is concerned with banishing homophobia from Latin America. Right, and here in the United States, the U.S. birth rate has hit an all-time low, 40.7%. As according to CNS News, the 2011 preliminary number of U.S. births is 1% less, or about 46,000 fewer births in 2011 than in 2010. The general fertility rate has declined to the lowest rate ever reported for the United States. But don't worry, more than 40% of all babies born in the United States last year were born to unmarried women. So we've got that going for us here in America. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, I feel like I want to say something serious, but I suppose I've said it. I've said what I came to say today, and I'll just close with this. From Al Arabiya Network, an electric shock killed 24 people and wounded 30 others, mostly women, celebrating a wedding in the eastern region of Saudi Arabia last Wednesday. A high-voltage power line fell down and touched the metal door of a house where the wedding was being held. Most of the casualties were women as they died attempting to escape through the electrified metal door. Celebratory gunfire, which in this Islamic tradition is suspected in causing the high voltage wire come down. Folks, Islam produces a savage and openly violent culture, and we need to be afraid of it, and we need to fight against it. But post-Christianity produces a much more virulent undercurrent of violence. Science and medicine, the advancements we've made in science and medicine themselves become tools of secret violence practiced in the dark places against the most innocent and helpless, against the poor and the confused, the helpless and the voiceless. It's just as violent, but it's hidden from view. But it explodes and it vomits out its pestilence on all of us on a regular basis, more and more, every day. But Jesus Christ is the only solution to our problems of both Islam and the post-Christian culture. Jesus Christ is the solution. Jesus Christ gives us the foundations of morality. And if we do not abandon him, he has promised that he will be with us even unto the end of the age. Amen. My name is Doug McBurney. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. Till then, let me thank American Right to Life, Theology Online, Colorado Right to Life, KGOV on the radio here in Denver. I'll be with Bob Enyart tomorrow for the last pre-election wrap-up before the big election day. And as always, I need to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.